Good afternoon and welcome to the College Financial Ladies Ask the Experts podcast. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Ann Garcia. I'm a fee-only financial advisor and I write a blog called The College Financial Lady. I get a lot of questions about areas that are sort of outside my my scope of expertise. And so I started this podcast series in order to bring some visibility to these issues. My guest today is my friend Sarah Doherty, who is a small animal veterinarian practicing in Portland, Oregon. She is passionate about health and wellness in all species. She strives to keep pets vibrant and strong so families can enjoy life together by focusing on healthy lifestyle choices, solid nutrition, managing pain, and preventing arthritis. She graduated from Kansas State University College of Veterinary Medicine in 2007 and moved back to Oregon to pursue an equine internship and residency. After 11 years in corporate medicine, she launched her own consulting practice, Positive Animal Wellness. In her spare time, she enjoys playing soccer, running, and hiking with her pack. As part of her journey through college and veterinary school, Sarah accumulated a whole bunch of student loans, which is a really common situation with career paths like veterinarians. And so we're gonna talk today about Sarah's student loans and what kind of impact they've had on her life, where they came from, and all those good things. So Sarah, do you wanna, why don't you tell me about how much and when you borrowed? So I think you mentioned you started borrowing as an undergrad.
Yes. So I actually got pretty lucky during my first couple of semesters because I didn't really have a whole lot of need. I had a small amount of savings. Actually got quite a bit of money in scholarships and whatnot. But then starting the second year of undergrad, definitely had to start borrowing basically the max allotment every semester throughout the rest there.
So the max allotment of federal? And so what did you owe when you came out of your undergraduate?
Undergrad ended up being just about $26,000.
Okay, so pretty standard amount of student debt. And then you went on to grad school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing your undergrad loans went into deferment.
They went into deferment. And again, vet school, of course, costs quite a bit more money than undergrad does. So I finished that for the 4-year total for just that was about almost $88,000.
Wow, so that's a good number. And then added to that, your undergrad loans with a few years of accrued interest.
Yeah, that total was somewhere close to $123,000.
Wow.
At the end.
So that's a big number on a vet salary. And I think one of the things that people forget is, you know, we hear a lot about doctors borrowing a lot for medical school, and then they come out of medical school and they're making, you know, $500,000 a year. And so it's really not, not a big problem to pay that back. But yeah, there are lots of career paths that require huge, you know, many years of education, that don't necessarily have the level of compensation.
Exactly. Yes. And that is the biggest problem in veterinary medicine right now. For example, as an intern, I made $30,000 a year during my internship year. And as a resident, I got a whopping $4,000 raise. So I was up to $34,000 a year. So that you can definitely see how that doesn't pan out.
Yeah. So did you know all along that you wanted to be a vet?
Yeah, I grew up in a pretty medically based household. My grandpa was an orthopedic surgeon, human orthopedic surgeon. My grandma was a nurse. And so I didn't really think twice about knowing that I wanted to be a doctor, but also having grown up on a farm, knowing that I didn't necessarily want that to be with people as much. Just because I had had so much experience, particularly with the horses.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so you had a pretty straight path through undergraduate, grad school, and mm-hmm. into your career. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I was hoping you could shed some light on, because I talked to a lot of families of 18-year-olds who are like, yeah, it's fine. We're going to borrow for college and no big deal and whatnot. And our 18-year-old selves often have a really hard time understanding the role that student debt will play in their adult lives. So can you talk a little bit about how student debt has impacted you? I mean, think of things like, do you own your own home? What's your credit score like? You know, do you make decisions even at this point in your career based on the fact that you have a big student loan balance?
Yeah, so I think probably to answer that question best is kind of just having to rewind a little bit is, you know, when you're trying to raise a family on $30,000 a year, there really isn't a whole lot extra for student loan payments. And so they do have this benefit of the economic hardship deferment, which I thought was a fantastic idea, but I didn't really, I think the hardest concept for 18-year-olds is compound interest, and not understanding what that really does to the student loan balance. But you do that
Let's take a step back, because you mentioned when you graduated, you owed $120,000, give or take.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your loan balance now?
Today, after 13 years after graduation, is $296,400.
Wow. So that's what can happen with student loans. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you were saying you took an economic hardship deferment.
Yeah.
Which is a really nice option to have with federal.
It is.
Loans,
it definitely
but
is.
Not without consequences.
Exactly. Exactly. So what that has meant long term is no, I do not own a house, nor can I get a house because my debt to income ratio is so off kilter. Credit score is in the low to good range. Obviously there's outside factors that go into that. But definitely that debt to income ratio is a huge part of what particularly banks look at when you're talking about mortgages and even cars, like going to buy a new car is not an option.
Yeah. So now are you in one of the income driven?
No, I'm not in the income-based repayment. And the biggest reason is most of the student loan companies look at your gross income. So while my gross income is okay, I also have a family of two children that I support, and my net earnings are not that great. And so that it turns out to, it's almost $2,000 a month on the income-based repayment. And so I'm on the repay plan, which is not obviously the most ideal, but it allows me to work on still being able to make a monthly payment until, you know, the kids are less dependent.
Yeah. So for those who are unfamiliar with the various income-driven repayment plans, there are about 8 different income-driven repayment plans that have been developed over the years. And what happens is anytime a new one comes out, the old ones still stick around. And so it can be quite a project to figure out which one is the best fit for you. But it sounds like repay is working out all right. And so with repay, a portion of your discretionary income is your payment every month. And whether or not that may or may not cover even the interest accruing on the loans, to say nothing of getting into the principal.
Yep. And that is exactly the problem, is that most times you end up, and that's another thing that I don't think 18-year-olds really understand, nor did I even really understand it until the last handful of years, is how much of your monthly payments don't actually go to the principal. So you can spend several years making payments that don't even actually hit the loan. They're just busy paying off interest.
Yeah. And the way that the payment is structured is you always pay the interest first. So many people who are in any of the federal income driven repayment programs, whether it's pay as you earn or repay or IBR or any of those, oftentimes you're not paying any principal at all, which means your loan balance is growing. Mm-hmm. And at the end, if you're not in public service loan forgiveness, then the amount of loan that's forgiven at the end of your payment plan is taxable income to you, which can be another pretty significant hardship.
Good year to
take off from work.
Yes, it was actually a little bit difficult to try to find some of the numbers because everything is listed as zero when you first log in, which is a great feeling, of course, but definitely capitalizing on that opportunity to still make payments, even though they're not quite as much as they were before. But taking every little advantage of this situation, if you can.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And so every year you need to go through the income certification process, right?
Yes.
And is that easy, hard?
It's not difficult, but definitely becomes a little bit annoying to have to submit paycheck stubs and everything every year. And because a lot of veterinary positions are somewhat production-based pay, income can vary from year to year. They can vary paycheck to paycheck depending on exactly how your employer has their pay schedule set up. So that also becomes a little bit difficult when you're trying to budget and plan for a student loan payment, not knowing exactly what your income is going to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I know you love what you do, and I know that what you do is perfect fit for you. Like, I can't imagine you doing anything other than what you do. But even so, would you have made different choices if you had known earlier in your education that you'd end up where you are today? You know, anything from going to a community college for some of your undergrad to even potentially choosing a different career path?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And honestly, I don't know that I can give you a great answer because as an 18-year-old, I was pretty greedy in some respects in the fact that I got a 4-year scholarship to play college soccer, and so I wasn't really willing to even look at other options because I just kind of felt that was going to take care of everything. And so what I probably would have done differently would try to figure out how to be recruited differently. So I didn't have a lot of offers. I came from a very small town in Southern Oregon, and soccer in the 1990s in Southern Oregon was not very big. Definitely is not what it is now. And so there wasn't a lot of visibility, nor did I know anything about how to go about doing that. So I ended up at a 4-year liberal arts Christian college. It was very expensive. So despite the fact that I had athletic scholarships, that didn't cover near as much as I really kind of assumed that it would.
Soccer scholarships are not where the big money's at.
They're not. And definitely if you're not at, I mean, I was at an NAIA Division I school, but it's still, when you're talking of an annual tuition of, in 1990, I think it was $40,000 to $50,000 a year. And my scholarship covered 40% of that. And then I had some odds and ends in academic scholarships. But I think the one thing I would have done differently with undergrad was try to get, either at a smaller Oregon State school or some other state college or university that had a little bit less of just an annual cost in general. Having said that, I wouldn't give up the 4 years that I played for anything, even if it means, $30,000 in student loan debt for that year or that section of time.
So then graduate school, you went in Kansas.
Yep. So I had, during undergrad, one of the other kind of speed bumps in terms of financial issues was I got married and had 2 kids during undergrad. So there is a little bit more expense with that. And I did end up taking a year off in between undergrad and vet school. And I did work to save some money that year. But because of that, I had gained Kansas residency during undergrad. So that did allow me to save some money for vet school because I did get resident tuition fees. But obviously that still is quite a chunk of change.
Absolutely. And did you do any specialty education for your veterinary degree or?
No, I didn't do any other than just my internship and residency afterwards, which is not actually required in veterinary medicine as it is in human medicine, but I opted to do that because I thought that would be a better career move at the time.
Yeah. So what's a typical, you mentioned your internship pay, but like what's a typical starting salary for a vet? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, it varies dramatically by state. Oregon, I think the last year they put the numbers out was 1999, the beginning of, or sorry, 2019,
okay.
the beginning of that. And it, the new graduate average was somewhere around 87,000. Okay. Now, when I graduated vet school, it was around 57,000, 58,000 was mm-hmm. that was the state average. Mm-hmm. So it definitely has made improvements.
Yeah, but I mean, you can really easily see, I mean, kind of the rule of thumb for borrowing is don't borrow more than your expected first year salary. I don't know how you could become a veterinarian unless you came from a very wealthy family without borrowing.
Yeah, and I had some classmates.
More than your first year salary.
Yeah, I had some classmates that worked all through undergrad and vet school. I personally don't know how I would have had a full-time job during vet school. Although as a parent, you are a full-time employee yeah. also. beyond your parents helping you or you working the entire time, it's almost impossible.
Yeah. And this is something, you know, we see this with physical therapists, we see it with teachers, we see it in so mm-hmm. many, you know, nursing, so many fields where we keep increasing the degree requirements and not supporting the students seeking those degrees mm-hmm. either during school or after.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you could look back at your 18-year-old self and give her some advice, what would it be? And you can go as big or as small as you want, because I know that we've talked a lot about your student loans, but I also know that you are extremely happy in your career path and probably wouldn't change that.
Actually, I don't think I would become a vet again. And the student loan debt is a portion of that. But in all honesty, there's a lot of other factors that make veterinary medicine extremely difficult. I don't know how much you've seen or read about the epidemic of suicide that is rampant through veterinary medicine, but while we know that debt to income ratio is a huge factor in depression and suicide among veterinarians, there's a lot more to it than that. So I think one of the biggest things I wish I would have known is all of the things they don't teach you in vet school about what it takes to be a veterinarian, mm-hmm. communication, people skills. You know, I think a lot of us, at least in my class and those before me, went into veterinary medicine because we love medicine and hate people. It's kind of a running joke, but in all reality, it's the people you deal with. And having known that or would have made at least me stop and think a little bit more about whether or not this was the best fit for me. And then I think somebody just really kind of sitting down and putting it in perspective for an 18-year-old to understand of, you know, because you can talk about hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loan debt, but that doesn't mean anything. You need to really put it in terms that a kid can understand. And I just wish somebody would have done that with me. And kind of even comparing the amount of time that you spend at the office or in the truck if you're a large animal vet compared to the amount of time you spend at home or the things that you miss, and kind of maybe putting a price tag on that. I don't think I saw my kids' soccer games until they were in club soccer as a junior high and high schooler. And even then, I only got to make maybe a quarter of them because I was at work all the time. So trying to maybe put a price on what your priorities maybe should be versus what you think you want them to be as an 18-year-old, and looking at that as a whole.
I think there's there's definitely an aspect of that to every career.
Yeah, absolutely.
What you think you do in that job and what people actually do can be quite different. I mean, I have a girlfriend who's a software engineer, and she said, 20% of my time is spent programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And 80% is doing something else, which does make it, it makes it very challenging with college being as high stakes financially as it is, mm-hmm. that, 16, 17, 18-year-olds are expected to know what their future looks like and to know what their 25 and 30 and 40-year-old selves are going to be doing, mm-hmm. so that they can make the choices today.
Yeah.
That get them on that path. So just, as a few parting words, can you be, just getting back to our original topic of student loans, can you give me some specifics? I mean, you mentioned you don't own a home, for example. A couple just high level specifics of how your life is different because you owe so much in student loans that hopefully can be a takeaway for people as they are starting to look at this college process.
Yeah, I think definitely the homeownership is probably the biggest thing that is different, especially when you look at friends my age. I think the other big thing that we kind of take for granted is the ability to even have a savings when, almost 50% of your take-home pay goes to rent, and then another 30 to 45% goes to your student loan payment. That doesn't leave a whole lot left over. So you have to definitely be very strategic in where you spend your money and thinking twice before I go to coffee with all the girls who do that, 5 days a week. And vacations are another big thing that I don't get to do just kind of willy-nilly. It definitely has to be planned well in advance so that I make sure that I can save every single month leading up to that, because there's just no disposable income for any of the kind of quote fun things in life.
Yeah. Do you have any emergency savings?
That varies depending on when, what my kids
need. What day of the month?
So I have one of the bonuses that I've just really been able to do, honestly, taking advantage of COVID is half of my student loan payment. I just took that money. Half goes to the student loan company and half goes in emergency cash fund that I have hidden away. And then I have some money in savings, but just barely over for four figures at this point. Which, if you would have asked me this 12 or 18 months ago, I would have had nothing. So it definitely has taken quite a bit of time to be able to accumulate anything.
Yeah. Any retirement savings?
Yeah. Like, thank God, 11 years working for corporate America, I had a 6% matching 401k. So I have some in there, but it is not on track because I wasn't able to start retirement savings until I was 32 or something like that. And so again, going back to that compound interest, there's about $500,000 in there, but that isn't going to last.
And you have two children. Any college savings for them?
Zero. They know they are 100% on their own.
Yeah. And this is definitely something that has framed your life and framed a lot of your of your choices and what you can do. And I just always find it so fascinating, you know, looking at career paths such as yours. And you know, like I said, physical therapists are another place where we see people in a similar situation where, you know, there's so many great people doing great work and with extensive training and knowledge, and they're, you know, smart and capable and just wonderful people who are barely squeaking by. Mm-hmm. And that to me is just a such an unfortunate thing. That I'm glad you were willing to talk about this and hopefully, you know, share some words of wisdom that'll help the next generation end up in a different place so that we can still have vets.
Yes, hopefully.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much. Any last words you'd want to say?
No, I think just most of it has been said, but just make sure that you are definitely very aware of what that balance is as you're entering each new year. That's another thing I don't think I paid that much attention to, is just signed the paperwork and moved on and didn't really pay attention to what that balance was doing every year. So just being cognizant of what is going on, because I think even just having that knowledge puts you in a better place on graduation day of having a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah, thank you so much. So this is Sarah Doherty, a veterinarian here in Portland, Oregon, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much.